Sustainability of local journalism. Hospital saves the day. Sends 20K. Donation helps newspaper recover from denial of $30,000 in tax credits. Hello, it's Tom Scott, Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 15th, 2026. We begin on the front page. Proposed regulations for backyard chickens. Cumbersome plan. Some aldermen not too keen on plan to require special use permits for urban chickens in Paxton. Paxton. Even those who have long supported allowing backyard chickens in Paxton are not so happy with the proposed new regulations that would finally make it a reality. Cumbersome was a word repeatedly used by both city aldermen and staff in attendance at City Hall on Tuesday, July 7th, to describe the proposed urban chickens permitting process outlined in the second version of a draft ordinance created by City Attorney Tony Shearing and reviewed by the Council's License, Permit, Zoning, and Insurance Committee. The main point of contention was a proposed requirement that any resident seeking to keep hens in their backyard first obtain two permits from the city, a building permit for the construction of the required coop and run, plus a special use permit that would require a public hearing of the Paxton Planning and Zoning Commission, the mailing of notices to all neighbors within 250 feet, and the publication of public notices in the local newspaper. I'm on the fence, Alderman Joe Reinhart told his colleagues on the four-member committee. It feels like it's creating more work for the Comptroller-Treasurer Tammy Jensen and a cumbersome process that virtually no one will follow. Reinhart and fellow Alderman Kristen Larson, an outspoken proponent of allowing urban chickens, both questioned why a special use permit in particular would be necessary. Other small communities around the area are doing this, Reinhart noticed, and I can't imagine it's as cumbersome there as this process is going to be here. Larson was adamant that no special use permit should be required and that backyard chickens should be a permitted use instead. I think this needs simplified, Larson said. Other towns do it. Why can't we do it? By the end of the hour-long committee meeting, the panel comprised of Larson, Reinhart, and Alderman Rob Pacey and Dean Geiken voted 4-0 to advance the draft ordinance as written to the full 8-member city council for further discussion at its next meeting, which was held Tuesday, July 14th. Larson, for one, was expecting plenty more debate. There's endless arguments on both sides, it feels like, Larson said. If the council were to decide that more changes are needed, Shearing said, the draft ordinance could be brought back to the committee for further talks, or instead, it could be sent straight to the Planning and Zoning Commission for its review at a public hearing. This is not set in stone, Shearing told Alderman. This can still be changed and edited by the full city council. Does every proposed edit need to come back to this committee? No, it doesn't have to. If you want to do it, it can. We can procedurally make that work. I would strongly advise against sending the ordinance back to the committee, though, because it would become very easy, really, to turn this into an endless loop in which anyone with malicious intent could make the process last years. Pacey agreed, suggesting that any further changes that the council determines are necessary be handled by the commission, which will also be tasked with issuing recommendation on whether the council should approve the ordinance. If there's not necessarily consensus on whether it should be a special use process or not, because I think there's been good arguments both for and against, at the end of the day, the group that's going to have to deal with the special use process is going to be the Planning and Zoning Commission. I think some input from their perspective would be helpful as to special use or not special use. The agenda for the Council's July 14th meeting, released Friday, including potential approval of referring the proposed regulations to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Pacey, along with Mayor Bill Engel, voiced support for the proposed inclusion of a special use permit requirement for backyard chickens. Pacey said he agreed with Schering's explanation that keeping chickens would alter the use of residential land to an agricultural use. "Tony, I agree with how you set it up as a process," Pacey told Schering. "It should be a special use permit. It makes sense as a special use. I would hesitate to just completely take this special use piece out of it." The mayor noted that a special use permitting process would allow for neighbors' concerns to be heard, even if those concerns do not change the outcome of permit applications. "The neighbors will not be able to say yes or no, but they'll at least be able to voice their concerns on having this," the mayor said. "I've lived in my house for 54 years, and I've got a neighbor who's got 7 cats. I'm not really thrilled about that. But if there's going to be chickens there too, I'd certainly be concerned about that, and I'd like to be able to bring it to somebody just so they know that I was unhappy." The council would be required to approve or deny all special use permits for backyard chickens after public hearings are held by the Planning and Zoning Commission, which would issue recommendations for the council's consideration, Schering said. Because special use permits can only be granted to property owners, not renters, the process prevents scenarios in which renters could apply for a permit without their landlord's consent, Schering noted. In response to questions from Larson and Reinhardt regarding the necessity of requiring a special use permit, Schering said, "It all ties back into the fact that we are materially modifying the use of the land in a way that has to be accounted for in our zoning code. There has to be at least some process or some procedure where we acknowledge that there are modifications being made to the use of a parcel, that is the place where, in our code, we do that," Schering explained. "So that's why it has to be in there. I think it more appropriately fits as a special use than as a permitted use." Schering said he spent a lot of time trying to find a way to reduce the proposed two-step application process, involving separate applications for a building permit and a special use permit, but he was unable to do so. "I can't figure out a way to do it," Schering told Alderman. The city's controller, Treasurer Jensen, said the special use permitting process could be very cumbersome to City Hall staff if backyard chickens proved to be popular in town. "It's very cumbersome for me to do these projects, hours every time," Jensen said. Schering was asked how other towns like Urbana are able to have a more streamlined process. Schering was unable to provide a clear answer, though, other than noting that Urbana, as a home rule municipality, can adopt rules to modify its normal zoning procedures if too cumbersome. Schering said the council could decide to allow backyard chickens as a permitted use, avoiding the need for residents to obtain special use permits, but he cautioned aldermen that doing so would eliminate the requirement for neighbors to be notified. "In the event that were to happen, you may want to consider additional safeguards," Schering advised the aldermen. The input from adjoining property owners would be considered and could affect the outcome through the special use process, Schering said. "If you take that out of the ordinance, my suggestion to you is that you need to add some mechanism added to the ordinance whereby people who are going to live next door to these hens have the opportunity to have their concerns heard. You've got a community that is almost literally 50-50 for this and against this. So you're going to have a fair number of people who would be upset that there is no step in the process where they get to voice their concerns as it relates to the modified use of another property." An initial draft of the ordinance, Schering noted, called for not just notice to be given to neighbors, but also for affirmative consent to be obtained from every adjacent parcel. This version does not require that, Schering stressed. It requires notice only. Schering suggested that the council keep the public notice requirement along with the special use permitting process. If my neighbors were constructing a chicken coop, I would want someone to at least listen to me before they got authorization to build it, Schering said. I think it makes sense to provide some mechanism whereby adjoining property owners who will be impacted by this modified use of land have the opportunity to voice whatever concerns they have. Reinhardt was not so sure, though. I wasn't expecting all the special use talk we're having tonight, Reinhardt told his colleagues. I mean, if the argument for special use is that the town is split on whether to allow urban chickens, and we want to make sure there's a process for people who are against it to speak up, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that or not. To be clear, Schering said in response, this is why I try to stay in my own lane and fail sometimes. Schering then elaborated. The primary argument of requiring a special use permit for backyard chickens is that this type of use of a piece of residential property is not similar to adding a tool shed, a deck, or a playhouse, or even a prefabricated dog kennel, and there are multiple reasons why that is true. This is more in line with an agricultural use than it is a residential use, and since you're fundamentally altering the use of the property, and the alteration of the use will create unique issues, concerns, problems, whatever word you want to use, that is why you would go through the special use process. It's not because the town is split 50-50, and so we need to give people an outlet. I think that's a secondary benefit of having it go through a special use process, but the primary focus is, does it alter the use of a residential property, and does it in a way that is distinct from a deck, a doghouse, or a tool shed? Reinhardt asked Schering to clarify why a chicken coop should be treated any differently than a dog kennel, which does not require a special use permit. First off, just as a fact, dogs are not used for egg production or production of anything, Schering said in response. We just don't use dogs or pets for food. Meanwhile, Larson questioned why even a building permit should be required to keep backyard chickens, noting that chicken coops and runs are typically smaller structures, often pre-manufactured, that do not require being secured by either posts or concrete. Schering said those structures can be a similar quality and material as structures that are regulated by our zoning code already. Pacey agreed. We talked last month about how a coop is essentially an accessory structure, and we're basically applying it like you would for a fence or a deck, Pacey said. As proposed, the backyard chickens ordinance would include a minimum setback of 20 feet between chicken coops and runs and a neighboring home. A 25-foot setback was proposed earlier, but it was reduced due to concerns that 25 feet might be too much for those lots that are only 50 feet wide. There would be a limit of 4 hens per property, along with the requirement that coops and runs be located in rear yards only. The only residential lots with zoning classifications of R1 or R2 could have backyard chickens. The proposed ordinance was spurred by the results of an advisory referendum on the March 17th primary election ballot that saw local residents vote in favor, albeit by a slim 9-vote margin of 335 to 326, 50.68% to 49.32%, of relaxing the city's long-standing rules that have made the keeping of urban chickens impossible on most residential properties. While numerous nearby communities already allow backyard chickens, they currently can only be kept in Paxton if they are at least 150 feet from any home, church, school, building, or public way, according to city code. Back to the front page. We have from a federal court, local martial arts instructor suing Park District claims discrimination. Paxton. A lawsuit against the Paxton Park District has been filed in U.S. District Court in Urbana by Paxton resident Rod Radke, who claims he was unlawfully discriminated against. Radke alleges in the lawsuit filed on May 18th that his civil rights were violated by the Park District former Park Board President Matt Quinlan and current board members Hannah Meents, Craig Keefe, and Mark Fredrickson. Radke said in his complaint that the five defendants did unlawfully discriminate against me and refused to let me utilize the Paxton Civic Center under the customary standard of operation for use of this facility. Radke is seeking damages of up to $260,000 to compensate for the loss of enjoyment of life and loss of income, as well as punitive damage and other relief as may be appropriate, including attorney fees and reasonable expenses. This past spring, Radke approached the Park District's Board of Commissioners with the intention of teaching a martial arts class on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 5 to 7 p.m., according to the lawsuit. Radke said he met April 9th with Melissa Robbins, the Paxton Civic Center's building manager, to speak about the standard operating policy for uses of the building. According to the lawsuit, Robbins explained to Radke that he would be able to teach classes and would be charged 40% of the daily attendance tuition. In comparison, Radke said, Robbins explained to him that the Zumba class hosted by the Park District runs on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and the class instructors pays 40% of her $6 class fee for each participant. The lawsuit said Robbins told Radke he would need to speak to the park board concerning the storage of the equipment he would use to teach. Radke said he then attended the park board's meetings on April 4th and May 12th. He said he explained in the April meeting that he would start classes on June 1st using the standard operating procedure for the Paxton Civic Center as utilized by the Zumba instructor. However, during the board's meeting, Quinlan, before resigning and leaving the meeting, announced that the arrangement the board had with the Zumba instructor was irrelevant to Radke's situation. Fredrickson told Radke he would need to abide by the daily rental agreement. Radke claimed in his lawsuit that he was bypassed when his time came to speak under new business on the meeting's agenda. After the meeting, Radke said he approached the board and was told he would be allowed to teach his class under the daily rental agreement, which is $150 per day paid in advance with a refundable security deposit of $120. Radke claimed he could not make my dream come true at that rate. I can make it work if I had the preferential standard operating system that the Zumba instructor and others are working under, Radke said in his statement of claim. This constitutes unlawful discrimination of my person. During the board's May meeting, the board approved the leasing of South Civic Center, which is connected to the main Civic Center and comparable in size. Radke sent a letter to the board members requesting details for a long-term lease of the property, which is still vacant at this time. According to Radke's claim, there has been no response from the board, which is a further unlawful discrimination of my civil rights. Defendants acted knowingly, intentionally, willfully, and maliciously, Radke stated. I have been unlawfully discriminated against. This has caused me to give up my dream of teaching martial arts in Paxton. I cannot pursue my dreams, and that has caused me substantial loss of enjoyment of life and loss of income. On Thursday, July 9th, the Park District, Quinlan, Meents, Keefe, and Fredrickson filed a motion to dismiss Radke's complaint. The defendants are represented by attorney Kurt Zimmer of the Delgado Law Group in Berwyn. Their motion claims Radke's civil complaint should be dismissed because it does not plead a plausible federal claim and does not identify facts showing unlawful discrimination, a constitutional violation, personal involvement by each individual defendant, or a municipal policy or custom sufficient to impose liability against the Paxton Park District. The motion states that Radke's disagreement with paying the same rental fee and applicable to facility users does not state a claim for discrimination, equal protection, retaliation, or any other federal cause of action, and the complaint fails to clearly identify what legal claim is asserted against each defendant, what protected right was allegedly violated, what conduct each defendant personally undertook, and how any alleged conduct caused a legally cognizable injury. Regarding Radke's assertion of discrimination, the motion noted that his complaint does not identify a protected class, disability, comparator, discriminatory statement, discriminatory policy, or facts supporting a reasonable inference that defendants acted because of any protected characteristic. The motion noted Radke's desire to conduct martial arts classes at district facilities and that the park district requiring him to use the standard rental agreement and pay the regular daily rental rate does not provide fair notice of a federal claim. Radke fails to state a plausible discrimination claim, according to the motion, which states that the plaintiff does not allege facts showing that he is a qualified individual with a disability, that he was excluded from a park district program, that defendants refused a reasonable accommodation, or that any denial occurred because of a disability. The district's alleged requirement that plaintiff pay the regular rental fee applicable to facility users is not discrimination, the motion further states. A public entity does not violate federal disability law by applying neutral rules, rates, or rental procedures absent facts showing exclusion, denial of access, or discriminatory treatment by reason of disability. The deadline for Radke, who is representing himself, to file a response to the defendant's motion is Thursday, July 23rd. As of Friday, July 10th, no hearings had been scheduled in the case. Both Radke and the park district officials declined in June to comment on the lawsuit. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 15th. Cheryl E. Elder, Elliott. Cheryl E. Elder, 67, of Elliott, died Friday, July 10th, surrounded by family. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, July 17th, and 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, July 18th, at the First Christian Church in Gibson City. A celebration of her life will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 18th, at the church. Memorial contributions may be made to the First Christian Church in Gibson City. Orville A. Lurson, Buckley. Orville Alfred Courtsey Lurson, 93, of Buckley, died at 8:30 a.m. Monday, July 6th at Heritage Health in Hoopston. A memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 25th at Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park with the Reverend Michael Ruhlig officiating. Burial will follow in the Trinity Lutheran Church Cemetery with military honors accorded by Cisna Park American Legion Post 527. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, July 25th at the church. Memorials may be made to the Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park or the Cisna Park American Legion Post 527. Gary James Marsh, Paxton. Gary James Marsh, 74, of Paxton, died Saturday, July 4th. Funeral services were held Saturday, July 11th at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. Burial followed at the Maplewood Cemetery in Rantoul. Memorials may be made to Friends of Fisher House, Illinois, in Hines, Illinois, or the Bedlington Terrier Wellness and Rescue Association Bisbee Fund in Berryville, Illinois. Joaquin Nunick Jr., Gibson City. Joaquin F. Joe Nunick Jr., 81, of Gibson City, died Wednesday, July 1st at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Private services and burial will take place. Memorial contributions may be made to CATSNAP or Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Gibson City. Thomas E. Scott, Sr., Elliott. Thomas Edward Scott, Sr., a native of Elliott, died Wednesday, June 24th at the VA hospital in Danville. Mr. Scott will be given a last train ride on the Monticello Railway Museum on Saturday, July 18th, departing the museum's Monticello Wabash Depot at 11:30 a.m. Relatives and friends are welcome to accompany him on his final ride behind a steam locomotive he helped to restore. Following the train's return to Monticello at 12:45 p.m., Mr. Scott's remains will be taken off the train and carried to the museum's Wabash Center by members of a Monticello American Legion post for military honors. A memorial and limited refreshments will follow in the building from about 12:50 to 3 p.m. We return to the news with a story from the Ford County Circuit Court. Vehicular hijacking charges, among others, filed versus man. Rural Ashcombe man allegedly strangled family member, stole his pickup. Paxton. An Iroquois County man who allegedly strangled a male family member and stole his truck in Ford County on Independence Day, then threatened to kill a sheriff's deputy, will remain detained at the county jail in Paxton through trial. Connor P. Jansen, 27, of rural Ashcombe, was charged in Ford County Circuit Court on Monday, July 6th, with vehicular hijacking, a Class 1 felony, along with aggravated domestic battery, a Class 2 felony, and threatening a public official, a Class 3 felony. Jansen was also charged with driving on a suspended driver's license, leaving the scene of an accident, and failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident. According to charging documents filed by State's Attorney Andrew Killian, Jansen allegedly stole a Chevrolet pickup from a male family member by the use of force on Saturday, July 4th. The charges allege that Jansen intentionally strangled the household member. Jansen also allegedly threatened the sheriff's deputy who arrested him, Chandler Gregerson, stating that he would hang Gregerson and that his children would grow up without a father, according to the charging documents. Ford County Sheriff Chad Johnson did not immediately respond to a text message requesting further details of the incident. According to online court records, a preliminary hearing is set for 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 15th, before Livingston County Associate Judge Michael Regnier, who was appointed by the Chief Judge of the 11th Judicial Circuit to preside over the case following Ford County Judge Matt Fitton's recusal due to a conflict. Jansen will attend the upcoming hearing via live audio and video, court records showed. During a detention hearing on Tuesday, July 7th, Regnier granted Killian's petition for pretrial detainment order and granted Jansen's request for the appointment of a public defender. If convicted, Jansen faces a sentence ranging from 4 to 15 years in prison for vehicular hijacking and sentences ranging from probation to up to 3 to 7 years in prison for aggravated domestic battery and 2 to 5 years in prison for threatening a public official. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.